Okay, Chevra, I want to learn a Gemara with you on Yud Ches Amud Aleph. It's probably 10 lines or so before the lines get very wide at the bottom. Darish Rebbe Yehuda Rebbe Loi Abruma Sharya. Rebbe Yehuda Bar Eloi says that Abruma is mutter. Zakt Rashi, what is Abruma? So Rashi says it's min dagim ketanim ve'ein shrutzin nikarin bahem. It is a type of little fish that you do not see the shrutzin in them. Meaning to say as follows. These fish are so little that there is some sort of concern that there might be treif fish that are mixed in with them because these fish are so little. But nonetheless, the Yehuda Bar Eloi says that the Abruma is mutter. Amar Lefana Rebbi Shmuel Rebbi Yossi, Rebbi Parish. Rebbi Shmuel Rebbi Yossi tells Rebbi Yehuda Rebbi Eloi, Rebbi, you have to explain more. Right? In other words, you didn't give a complete explanation. Kacha ma'arba. This is what Rabbi Yossi, this is what my father said. Shalmakom ploni asura. Shalmakom ploni muteres. In other words, Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi said that the abruma, these tiny little fish, you can't categorically say that they are mutter or asur. Abruma from this area is mutter. Abruma from that area is usher. Shamakum ploni sharya, shamakum ploni is usher. Kiha de Amar Abaye, just like Abaye said, haitzachanta de bav nahara sharya. We'll come back to this in a few minutes. I just want to go through the Gemara. But Abaye said that tzachanta is a type of fish. Rashi says it's min dagim ketanim. And in Meseches Avodah Zarah Daf Lamed Tes, Rashi says that Tzachanta is one of the things that's mentioned in the Mishnah called Chilek, Ches Yud Lamed Kof. But Tzachanta of Bab Nahara, if it comes from the river Bab, is Mutter. My Taima, why is the Tzachanta from this river okay? Maybe the reason is because it's Radifi Maya. Right? Radifi Maya means what? It means the water goes very quickly. It's a river. Rivers often have strong flows of water. So if you're going to tell me that Tzachanta from the river Bab is okay because it's Radifi Maya, and there's a second part, the high dag tame came on the less like chut hashidra lo matzikayim. Treif fish do not have backbones. I don't know if you ever like were into Garfield. You know how Garfield eats a fish and like the whole backbone comes out? Right? That's a traditional fish. Then you have like the non-traditional Jewish gefilte fish, which doesn't have a backbone. I mean, according to tradition, the reason why we eat gefilte fish on Shabbos is to avoid shilas and borer, because if you have bones in the fish, there's a concern that maybe you'll separate the bone from the fish rather than the fish from the bone. So that's why they have fish without bones. But this Gemara is saying a chiddush. The Gemara is saying, Zoe, it looked like you had a comment almost.
I have a comment.
Yes.
Rabbi Yitz Greenberg has written about gefilte fish on Shabbos, and he says it's our little taste of Olam Haba when we'll be dining with the Leviathan and everything like that, that we have this little taste of fish on Shabbos to remind us. So,
right. So it might also be a taste of Olam Haba if you, again, I don't know the authenticity of this statement in the Medrash, but there is a comment in the Medrash that things which were written early treif in this world might become kosher in the next world. So the basic idea is that these fish do not have backbones. Tray fish don't have backbones. And because tray fish don't have backbones, they can't survive in the River Bob, where the water goes very quickly and it would kill the fish. Apparently, Sima had an interesting comment about invertebrate fish during Seder.
I was just noticing exactly what you said, that kosher fish all are vertebrates, like, whereas non-kosher, like fish that people eat, like clams and things like that, are all invertebrates, basically.
Correct. I mean, but it's not necessarily that is the category. This Gemara is assuming that way, which is a chiddush. The Gemara is saying that non-kosher fish don't have backbones. Okay. Don't have backbones. But the Gemara asks, v'haka chazinon dekai. You can't tell me that the tzachanta from this river that flows very quickly, the River Bab, can't tell me it's kosher because a tray fish won't survive in a river because the water goes too quickly. V'haka chazinon dekai. We see that it's alive. Right? We see that tray fish without backbones survive in rivers. Ella, the Gemara has a different suggestion. Mishum demelichi maya, because the water is salty. It's like we're going back and forth. No, is the River Bab a river with like that's very fast flowing, or is it a place of salt water? Is there any river that has like salt water that's a fast flowing river? Like salt water is not supposed to be in rivers, correct?
You can have brackish rivers if they're near to the ocean. Because like in Florida, that definitely exists in the Everglades, where you have some areas with very brackish water. Like there are crocodiles in the Everglades, and that's why, because they can survive in this salty water.
But does the water go quickly? In other words, first the Gemara says the River Bob, right, flows very fast. Then the Gemara says it's salt water.
Is it like ocean level salt or brackish? I could see it being brackish if it's close to... I don't know. I think maybe that could happen.
Again, I don't know. I also don't know, is there any quantifying factor for how salty it is? I mamish don't know. But the Gemara says, Elam mishum demalichi maya. Maybe it's because it's salty water. V'hai dag tomei kema de lesle kilfi lo matzikoi. A dag tomei doesn't have scales. By definition, a dag tomei doesn't have scales. And it can't survive in salty water because the salt will apparently kill it. The scales somehow keep the salt out. Is that correct? The scales keep the salt out of getting into, let's say, the bloodstream of the fish. And since a tray fish doesn't have scales, the salt will kill it. But the Gemara asks again, "V'haka chazinon dekai," but we see that it does survive, right? We see that these tray fish survive in salty water. Ella, zakli Gemara, mishum delo mar betinai hu dag tamei. The dirt at the bottom of the River Bab does not grow dag tamei. The Gemara assumes, and this is against what we know scientifically, the Gemara assumes that fish are created by the mud at the bottom of a river. That is where fish are born. Now, it makes sense that the Gemara would assume this way, because especially fish that lay eggs, and the eggs are very tiny, you don't see the eggs, right? And all you see is at some point these tiny little fish begin to grow up from what seems to be the mud. So the Gemara assumes that fish grow from the mud at the bottom of rivers. That's what the Gemara assumes. And the mud at the bottom of the River Bab does not produce tray fish. It's a special type of mud that only produces kosher fish. The Gemara then tells us the kicker. Amar Ravina v'ha'ina d'shafchi nahar etan v'nahar gamda l'hosam asira. Zot Ravina, that bizman hazeh, that the river Bab does not flow on its own, but the river Eitan and the river Gamda flow into it, so it's going to be Aser, because even though the river Bab doesn't have any tray fish that grow out of it, but that's not true about the river Eitan and the river Gamda. Ad kan divrei ha-Gemara. Okay, it's a nice little Gemara. Basically, what we learn from this Gemara are one principle is that invertebrate fish are presumed treif. That's one principle. The next principle in the Gemara is the halacha that kosher fish have scales. Non-kosher fish don't have scales. That's a pasuk in the Chumash. And then the Gemara has its assumption about how fish grow, that fish grow from the mud at the bottom. Now, I assigned you a Rashash. Did any of you have a chance to take a look at this Rashash?
Can I ask a question before we go to the Rashash?
Yes.
So we felt that the Gemara started telling us about these fish because it was the same...
Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eli.
Yeah, exactly. Is that it? Like, there's no other connection, right?
I don't think so. Yeah, okay. It's like the Gemara does this sometimes, and like we end up scratching our heads, like, what on earth is this doing here? And the answer is basically has no place to really fit in neatly in Shas, so we stick it based on the name. Yeah, that's what the Gemara says. Now, effectively, the maskana of the Gemara is that Sachanta from the river Bab should theoretically be kosher, but because other rivers flow into it, that's why it's treif. That's the maskana of our Gemara. Now comes along the Rashash, and the Rashash makes a big deal about this Gemara. The word Sachanta, right, is actually a biblical Hebrew word. What does it mean? It means stench, stink, the smell. So the Rashash, I'd say he had a very fine nose for these things, but he says, Libi Omerli, Dizehu Hanikra Balaz stinkus. That the fish that our Gemara is talking about is the fish called the stinkus. Kitzachan. It's a pasuk in Yoel. So this fish is the stinkus fish. The ayin resh perk yud betrumis. Look in the mission over there. Ukimaduma shenemar li shigam bahem derech his arev dagim ktanim tmeim ve'enam nikarim ukidapirish rashi. Be'abruma. And I heard, Zach the Rashash, that among these fish, treif fish get mixed in. Let's just take a pause over here. One second. No, let's read two more sentences and then we'll pause and we'll go on. V'ha'olam noheg bahem heter ve'im potzepeh. Right? People eat the fish called the stinkus, and no one says anything, and God should forgive them. God should forgive them. People eat the stinkus, God should forgive them. And we'll talk about the continuation of Rashash in 2 minutes. Now, this stinkus, you could actually Google very quickly, S-T-I-N-C-U-S. Natan Slifkin, who I actually like him. He's like great. So Slifkin on his blog, Zootora, wrote something about this. The story goes as follows. The Taisus Yontiv, I have right over here a book by Joseph Heller called Yom Tov Lipman Heller, Portrait of a 17th Century Rabbi. Taisus Yontiv tells us a story that when he was in Vienna, a certain cousin of his wife, a doctor who was studying in the University of Padua. Just FYI, most medieval universities did not admit Jews. And the University of Padua admitted Jews. So a lot of the quote-unquote scholarly figures in among the Achronim passed through Padua. So Tosfos Yontif tells a story that his wife's cousin was named Aaron Lutzerna, and he came to the Tosfos Yontif with a fish with the unlikely name of Stinkus Marinus, and he asked him whether the fish is kosher or not. Now, what's the thing? The thing over here is as well. The Gemara in Nida on Nun Aleph and the Gemara in Chulin tells us that even though the Torah has two simonim of dagim, the Torah says in Parsha Shmini that fish to be kosher require snapir and kaskases, require scales, that's the kaskases, like the Pusik says in Shmuel, when Goyas went to fight, he had a kaskasim, it's like almost a coat of male arms, right? It's like the pieces of metal that overflow each other. That's kaskasim. And snapir are fins. So Taira says that fish to be kosher needs snapir and kaskasis. But the Gemara says that there's no such thing in the world that has kaskasis but doesn't have snapir. There's nothing in the world that has scales but does not have fins. So therefore, if I want to identify a fish as being kosher, all I need is scales. How come the Torah says both snapir and kaskases? Zok the Gemara Nida lahagdol Torah lahadira. It's almost like to teach you that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to teach us this interesting scientific fact that we would not have known otherwise, that whatever has kaskases has snapir. Okay, so whatever has scales has fins also. Great. So this doctor or this fellow, the cousin of the Tosfos Yontif's wife, shows up in Vienna and he has a fish called the Stinkus Marinus. Stinkus probably means it smells bad. And it has scales. And it doesn't have fins. It has four legs at the bottom of it. The Tosfos Yontif in the third parak of Chulin tells you this whole story. And in Joseph Heller's book, it's on page 164, 165, he tells you the story. He brings the fish to him. He tells him that it's a poisonous thing. Pharmacists know ways to remove the poison. And this fellow asks the Tosfos Yontif a shaila, it has scales. According to the Gemara, whatever has scales has to have fins. But how could this thing be kosher? Because it's poisonous. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't make a poisonous fish kosher, because then people could end up eating it and dying. That's his kasha. Honestly, in the scheme of kashas, I don't know. Like, I would not lose any sleep over this kasha. But this doctor comes to the Tosfos Yontif, or this cousin, whatever it is, and he asks this kasha. Now, the Tosfos Yontif at first suggested that even though the Gemara says that whatever has scales has to have fish, maybe that's talking about the type of fish that existed when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. But, and this is like an unbelievable thing, that you can see why Slifkin loves this, but there are certain hybrids that developed afterwards, and animals intermated, intermingled, and now you have things that have scales and don't have fins, and it's no longer true. The statement in the Gemara that whatever has scales have fins is no longer true. That's what the Tosfos Yontif answered right away. I mean, that is a chiddush on its own. Like that, what? The Gemara is saying something, lahagdol Torah lahadira, but it's not true anymore. It's a little bit funny, no? The Gemara says that whatever has scales has fins. to teach us how great HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. I don't tell you how to do it. And now I'm saying that it's not true in the year 1624. But okay, it happens that the Rebbe Reb Yonson Abeshitz, when this Stinkus Marinus became a quiz celeb among the rabbis of the time period, the Rebbe Reb Yonson Abeshitz said that maybe when the Gemara says that there's nothing that has scales but doesn't have fins, nothing doesn't mean nothing. It means extremely, extremely rare. For example, the Gemara, this is actually the first thing I taught my Torah in Stern. In Maseches Avodah Zarah, the Gemara has sugyas about cholov tamei, about milk from treif animals. And the Gemara says a cholov tamei eino maimed, that a treif animal will not produce milk that can become cheese. That's what the Gemara says. It happens that today we know that certain types of llamas produce milk that can become cheese. So what do we do with that? So the answer probably is that maybe Chazal were not aware of llamas. It's like a new world animal. Maybe the process to make the llama milk into cheese is so labor-intensive, expensive, etc. Or maybe what Rabbi Yonason Abeshitz is saying is true, that when the Gemara, the Torah, whatever it is, makes these statements, it means to an overwhelming majority of cases, 99%, but you'll find an exception. That's what the Rabbi Yonason Abeshitz said. And the Tosfos Yontiv, in his first suggestion, said, you know what? We made an exception. Right? Or, you know what? This exception developed after Matan Torah. The exception developed after Matan Torah because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah, there was no such thing that had scales but not fins. But now there is. That's a Tosfos Yontiv, very similar to Rebbe Yonason Abeshitz. Then the Tosfos Yontiv comes up with his Chiddush afterwards when he says that a Stinkus Marinus is not really a fish. It's a, what he calls, chayos hayam. It's a wild animal in the sea, but it's not a fish. The Torah says that by dogim, there are simonim of snapper and kaskeses. But not everything that's in the water is by definition a dog. No? Is a crocodile a dog? Is a Stinkus Marinus a dog? All of these amphibious creatures, they might not be dogim. And that's what the Tosfos Yontiv says, which is actually a very elegant mahalach. The Torah's definition of dog is different than just not everything in the sea is a dog. Like the Torah defines ophos, right? Part of the treif listing of birds is the ataleif, no? Usually it's assumed that an ataleif is a bat, not as a baseball bat, but a bat like in a cave. We know that bats are not birds, right? Bats are mammals, is that true? I think bats are mammals. So the Torah considers it a bird. What's the pshat? The pshat is that the Torah's definition of dag and definition of oaf is not exactly what we consider today to be fish or to be birds. The Torah works with different definitions. So the story over here is the Rashash is making a suggestion. Libi Omerli, he says, like, it seems to me that since we have the term tzachanta, it means it smells bad. So this is the Stinkus. Now, what exactly is the Stinkus? Hard to know. It's really hard to know. What exactly was the fish that came to the Tosfos Yontiv? There were some poskim, by the way, who said that it was kosher. They say, no, Chazal say, whatever has scales is kosher. So you want to eat your Stinkus and have fun. You could eat, according to this, various, uh, Let me say it like this. There was a whole literature about what the stinkus was. I remember when I said the Shiurim in Mount Sinai, so my daughter, who's very into fish, so at that, well, that point she suggested that maybe it's a mud skipper. Apparently mud skippers smell very bad. I don't know. In Dr. Rabbi Slifkin's blog, he suggests that maybe the whole thing was a mistake, that they sent the Tosis Yontif a lizard. There's a lizard that meets, it's a skink. I think that's what he calls it. Stink and skink sound very similar, no? They both end in ink. So he says that's a type of lizard, and that's, and the Tosis Yontif didn't know that's not really a creature that lives in water primarily. It might be able to go in water, but doesn't primarily live in water. It wasn't a dog at all. This question about the Stinkus marinus was an interesting question. It went on for many years. People were fighting about it. But the mahalach that the Tosis Yontif suggests, the second mahalach, that Snapper and Kaskeses is matir, only something that's called a dag, leads to a huge halachic discussion about what does it mean to be a dag. The Torah doesn't list names of dagim, but the Torah just says snapper and kaskeses. So some of the achronim say that, oh, according to Tosis Yontif, you see that to be a dag, it has to be, has to have Tzuris Hadag. What does Tzuris Hadag mean? So some say it has to be basically streamlined, long and pretty much narrow. But something like a clownfish. Is it a clownfish? Or they call them flatfish. You know, they look very circular. So some say that these flatfish, Sima, do you have a comment or?
Oh, yeah. Were you talking about flounderfish? They're called flounders, and they're like, they start out fish-shaped, and then they get flat as they get older.
So they start fish-shaped, and they get, like, fatter and as they get older. So, right, that's one thing. Or many of these types of fish, like, if all you need for fish to be kosher is scales, so go to the aquarium, and 95% of the fish that you'll see are going to be kosher. There's also the question, what does it mean that it has scales, halachically? We'll talk about that in a few minutes also. The Ramban al HaTorah writes that it has to be that it peels off easily. Sharks have scales, no? If you rub up against shark skin, you'll feel the scales. That's why it's going to like give you a burn. But shark scales don't come off easily. The Ramban writes al HaTorah, it has to be something like a kolef biyat. But let's say I go to an aquarium, 95% of the fish have scales that could come off easily. But it could be it doesn't have Tzuris Hadag. And Tzuris Hadag might mean narrow and relatively thin, but one of these like circular things don't count. And some go so far as to say that to be a Tzuris Hadag, it has to be that has like a V-shaped tail. If you, Rav Schechter told me that a number of years ago, he spent part of the summer in South Africa. Yeah, they brought him there to say shirim, whatever. So the first thing that happens, he's in South Africa, someone asks him, what does the Rav say about the king clip? So he's like, what are you talking about? So apparently the big kashrus issue in South Africa is whether a type of fish called king clip, K-I-N-G-C-L-I-P, is king clip kosher? And this is like the big fight in the kashrus agencies in South Africa, because the king clip, some say, doesn't have Tzuris Hadag, because its tail isn't V-shaped. How far do we go with this idea of Tzuris Hadag is hard to figure out, right? It makes sense that that we're not going to be mako on every aquatic creature. And I'm not going to say that the Stinkus marinus, whatever it is, my, pick your smelly fish, that smelly lizard, Some say also, I think in Rabbi Slifkin's essay, he says the reason why they call it stinkus is because it smells bad, because by the time Tosfos Yontif got it, it was like dead, wrapped up in newspaper. Of course it smells bad. It's like a three-week-old fish out of the refrigerator. How good can it smell? But this is one of the conversations in terms of what is considered a tsuras hadag, and only if it's a dog do I say that snapper and kaskeses is matirat. That's the first yesod that we have. Now, let's go weiter in this rashash. The rashash is invoking, remember, the Gemara says that sachanta, if it comes from the river Bab, is okay. So then the Rashash continues, V'yesh lomar. But first he asks Akasha, how can people eat the stinkus? And he says, God should forgive them. That's the beginning of the Rashash. The Rashash adds, V'yesh lomar, the Rashi in Avodazar Pirish, Sachantes chilek, shehu sultanus. Right? The Gemara tells me in Avodazar that there are certain things that I can't eat, certain goyisha things I can't eat. I can't eat bishalakum. I can't eat cholavakum. I can't eat chilek. Chilek is, the Gemara says, tzachanta. And, right, same word, tzachanta. And the Gemara defines it as sultanus. And what Rashi says over there is, de'en lo achshav, v'osid legadel la'achar zman. It does not have scales now, but it will grow its scales later on. Rashi on the Rif says that the sultanus has scales, but the scales come off when it leaves the water. That's wrong. Now, let's just pause for a second. As a matter of halacha, both are true. If something does not have scales now, but will have scales later, it's a kosher fish. If something had scales, but lost its scales, it's a kosher fish. This became the big issue about swordfish and marlin, no? Traditionally, it was assumed that one of the dividing lines between Orthodox Jews and conservative Jews is whether you eat swordfish, no? Wasn't this like standard, what they taught you growing up?
We talked about this in my Habora, and Rachel was shocked to learn that people eat swordfish.
So it shocks people. Who eats swordfish? So the Gemara says, if it has scales and the scales fall out when it leaves the water, it's kosher. Apparently marlin and swordfish, this happens. Rabbi Tendler, years ago, Rabbi Tendler should have a Refuah Shleima, but years ago, he wrote an article in the Jewish Observer, which was like the Agudas magazine, about how swordfish is non-kosher. Rav Schechter, for years, has been giving shiurim, saying that the Darkei Tshuva writes in Simen Pei Gimel, that's a Simen in Yeridei about Dagim, Darkei Tshuva says that Dag HaCherev is kosher. Dag HaCherev sounds very much like a swordfish. And it meets the definition of a kosher fish because it has scales when it's in the water. And when you pull it out, the scales come off. Like you can actually see that happening on a swordfish or a marlin. So Rav Schechter feels that it is technically kosher. I think there are people, right? Are there any kashrus agencies that give hashgach on swordfish? Does the KVH? I don't know.
Definitely doesn't have tsuras hadag, though, the way you describe tsuras hadag.
That was Rachel's issue with it. She was like, that's like a fish you see at an aquarium. It's not a fish you eat, which sort of seems like tsuras hadag.
Well, again, just because you see an aquarium you don't eat it doesn't mean that it's not kosher. But in terms of whether it has a tsuras hadag, again, I'm not sure what tsuras hadag means. But if it's long and thin and it has a V-shaped tail, a swordfish, I think, has those qualities. Happens that swordfish has a very long beak or whatever you would call it. But I don't know. Rav Schechter feels that swordfish is kosher. I don't know if he himself has ever eaten a swordfish. I don't know. But the point is that what I see in this Gemara is two things. The Gemara says that chilek is tzachanta. Rashi says tzachanta is a fish that does not have scales now, will have scales later. Zakmil Rashash in the parentheses, if it had the scales and then they came off, it's also kosher. That's what Rashi and the Rif says, but that's not the correct shot over here. So now here's the thing. Va'akarchecha, lo asaruhu, I'm just reading on in the Rashash, lo asaruhu ela ba'od shalot simchu ba'akaskasin. The oz eno nikar rabbein hatumeyim. Aba achashit somchu ba'akaskasim nikar heite ba'yadehem, v'chein kosev hashach in yeredeyah simen kuf yudalad. Meaning, the Gemara says that there's this iser of tzachanta, the iser of chilek. Chilek is a fish that right now does not have scales, but will have scales later on. Chazal asserted it because you can't really tell what's a chilek now and what isn't. You can't tell, or you can't tell what will grow the scales and what won't grow the scales. It's a tiny little fish. It's going to get mixed up with lots of other fish, which will not grow scales later on. So therefore, Chazal imposed an iser on the chilek, because since right now it doesn't have scales, it might get mixed up with other fish that don't have scales now. But those other fish that don't have scales now will never have scales. So they are shreif fish. This fish doesn't have scales now, but it's technically a kosher fish because it will have scales later on. That's the halacha. And the Rashash adds, and he quotes that the Shach in Yeredeah Kuf Yudalad says this also, that therefore, if the fish has scales on it, for sure it's kosher. Right? The whole shayla of the chilek, the tzachanta, whatever, is when it does not yet have scales. And then I'm worried it's going to get mixed up with other fish. But if it has scales, if the scales grew, and I could look at the scales, so I pass him, oh, kosher, 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 because I'm looking at the scales. It's a kosher fish. That's what the Rashash adds. Then Rashash asks a kasha to end this, which is a really hard kasha to answer. Ulam v'da d'kashali. Ma'ir d'kasha b'mishnah chilek b'in d'var mishal nachrim d'afil d'Yisrael nami osir. The Rashash is bothered by Akasha. He says, how come chilek is listed as something that is treif when it comes from goyim? L'cha'ira, if the concern is that it doesn't have scales now, and therefore you might mistake it for a fish that will never grow scales. So hu hadin, if it's owned by a Jew, the chilek should be treif. Because the concern is not, oh, this was made by a goy, therefore it's a problem. The concern is, maybe it's never going to have scales. If that's the case, if that's the concern, maybe it'll never have scales, so whether it's kosher or treif, it's a problem. Whether it's Jewish or goyish, it should be a problem. So the Rashash asks this kasha. And it's a good kasha. It's a very good kasha. In the
maybe if a non-Jew has it, then since you can't tell that it has scales, that's when you're worried. But if a Jew has it and they'll tell you it's this kind of fish that's going to eventually have scales, then it's kosher because I don't know if I'm making sense.
Now, what you're suggesting is that if it's a Jewish chilek, then you could trust the fisherman who's going to say it will have scales later on. If it's a goyish chilek, then you can't. I mean, I think that's true. Although, even though if you buy it from a goy, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah has a rule that chilek uman is kosher. It's not a din in Jew versus goy necessarily, but if I'm a professional fishmonger, which was Shakespeare's favorite profession, as we all know. If I'm a professional fishmonger, so then I'm Neman. I'm trust, even if I'm non-Jewish, I'm trusted to say that this will grow scales. Uman lomara umnase, the professional won't mess up his professional reputation. Even though it's a din d'oraisa, the Gemara says a chilakum in his kasher. This is what the OU relies on for tuna. No? Tuna is one of the big differences. We spoke about differences between Haredi Hashkach in South Africa and non-Haredi Hashkach in South Africa in terms of the king clip. One of the big differences in Hashkachas in America is, do you eat OU tuna fish? And there's a few reasons not to eat OU tuna fish. One of the reasons is that there's no mashgiach on the boat, and you don't know if the fish is really a tuna. Maybe the fish is some tray fish that got caught. Basically, this is not the most ethical, humane way or whatever fishing, but they drop these massive nets and like thousands of fish swim in them. But that's why like all your cancer tuna say dolphin free, because they have the type of nets that where they'll get rid of the dolphins after. Sometimes dolphins get stuck in tuna nets. Well, here's the problem. There's no mashgiach on the tuna boat. So how do you know that it's kosher? So the OU relies on this din of chilak omen, that we trust the professional fishmonger. They will lose their reputation. They'll lose if what's it called? If they say that it's this type of fish and it's really a different type of fish. There are three standard types of tuna. There's albacore, skipjack, and yellowfin, correct? It happens that the three different types of tuna each have to be cooked for a different amount of time until it's ready to be put in the can. And if you cook it for too little, you could end up like killing the people who eat it. Something like that. So they have to know exactly. It's not only that you can't mess up the difference between a tuna and some tray fish. Even within the tuna, they have to separate the albacore from the skipjack from the yellowfin. That's why the OU relies on the OU relies on the identification of the non-Jews based on this rule of chilak omen. So this was a whole long explanation to why I don't like Sima's suggested answer. Because what you're saying is that maybe the din of chilek being non-kosher is only if it's a guy's, but if it would be a Jew's, we would trust the Jew. So what I'm saying is if it's a guy, we would also trust them, providing it's a guy who's an woman, providing it's a guy who's an expert. Again, it could be that maybe it means any guy. In the Sefer Chelkas Binyamin on this din in Simin Kuf Yudalet, he works very hard to try to answer this kasha. How come chilek is only true by goyish fish, not by Jewish fish? Tanya, it looks like you have something to say.
Oh, no, I was just curious. You said there were three reasons to use the Hamish brands, and you said one reason. So I heard the Bishul Yisrael one, but I didn't know.
There's the Bishul Yisrael versus Bishul Akum, yeah. There is no Jew who cooks dagim tuna fish is different than bumblebee tuna fish. Bumblebee tuna fish is no Jew who cooks it. The OU is assuming that there is no iser of bishul akum on the fish, on the tuna. The Haredi hashgachas are nervous that there is bishul akum. Now, why would there not be bishul akum? So the OU has a tziruf of a few sfeikos. One is that the way they cook the tuna is you have like thousands of cans in the retort and they put it in and there's like hot steam that cooks it. There's one opinion in the Drisha that the din of Ma'ushan, which we paskin is bishul for basar b'cholav, but we paskin is not bishul for bishul akam. And the Drisha says that maybe Ma'ushan means hot steam. So that's one reason why there's no bishul akum. Perhaps also it's not olal shulchan melachim. No one would put a can of tuna at a state dinner, although The 45th occupant of the White House probably would have, because he also had hamburgers or something at state dinners, but we don't bring any rayas. Emivim rayim and ashotim. But, that's the Bishul Akum question. It happens that Bizman Hazeb, Bishul Akum, is probably not relevant at all to tuna. Once sushi is becoming so popular, people eat raw tuna type. And I think some of the tunas are used in, there is sushi grade tuna. Some, I think albacore is used in sushi or something. I almost never eat fish. So I know very little about this, but I think now that sushi is becoming popular, we could argue that it's a davar that's nechal kamo shulchai, and therefore it's not subject to Bishul Akum. So there's a few issues by the tuna. One is the identification of the fish. Maybe there's trey fish there. So the Oyi relies on Chilak Omen. Chilak Omen is quoted in the Beis Yosef. It happens not to make it to Shulchan Aruch. What does that mean exactly? That's a good question. There's the Bishul Akum issue. There's another issue that there's an Isser of Kirvei Dagim. I'm not allowed to eat fish unless I myself see the fins and scales. I can't go to the store and buy a fish fillet. And they'll tell me in the store the fish fillet is halibut or it comes from some kosher fish. I'm not allowed to do that. I have to be able to identify the fins and the scales. So one could argue that tuna should be treyf for that reason, because no Jew ever identified the fins and the scales. The cheshbon that the OU has is that there's mamish no concern at all that trey fish got mixed in, because on the boat it could never happen, and like the umin lomar omnasi, like we spoke about, so therefore there is no concern. It happens, just FYI, there's someone on this call from the Boston area. A few years ago, the Boston Globe did an expose about the fish that were served in the restaurants around Boston. Mislabeling of fish is more the norm than anything else. Mm-hmm. So you'll go to a restaurant and they'll tell you this is whatever, a nice expensive fish, and it's a piece of garbage, lousy fish that they caught off of, you know, some boat in New York Harbor next to all the garbage, or whatever it is. Am I getting this correct, Zoe?
I don't know so much about the Boston one, but I used to live in Florida and they did a similar survey, and one of the fish that they looked up was Florida grouper, which is a very expensive fish, and it was almost 70% of what was being sold as Florida grouper was not Florida grouper.
Right. So that's actually strong evidence for the wisdom of Chazal that you're not allowed to rely on someone saying this is grouper, this is whatever type of fish, because they'll deceive you. You need scales on the fish. And as a matter of halacha, I think this is true. You can't, if I go to the fish store, if I see scales on the fish, it's kosher. I can eat the fish. It's great. If I buy a package of fish, I need to have some scales there, or else I can't eat it. Api halacha. They could rely on a Jew. Right. So I could rely on a Jew who tells me that it's kosher if it's a Jew as nemanus and kashrus. But if I'm in, right. So if I go to a kosher fish market and it's a store with hashgacha, I could buy a fish fillet. But I go to a regular fish store in Washington Heights and you have all these fish on the, what's it called, on the ice over there, you can buy a fish, but it has to, you have to identify the scales. You should really bring your own knife. If you go to a non-kosher fish market, if they use the goyish, a non-kosher knife, you might have to cut off a kedei klipa because there might be a concern that they used it to cut a trey fish, then they're cutting your fish afterwards. But yeah, the one exception that they say to this rule that you need to identify the scales and like a fish fillet is non-kosher is salmon. And that's because there's no fish that's treif that has the same color as salmon. It happens that there are other fish of the same color as salmon. If you have tropical fish in your aquarium at home, there might be some fish that have the same color as salmon. You probably don't want to eat them. They're very little. They're not so filling.
Arctic char has the same color as salmon, the exact same color.
But it's a kosher fish also.
Yeah. It's not a problem.
There's no treif fish that has the same color as salmon. So that was grand. A few years ago, they found aneratoxin or something. I've forgotten the name. There's like a dye that they inject into fish that can give the fish like an orangish salmon type of color. And they do this for the same reason, because it's much cheaper than salmon, etc. So the shaila is, can you still rely on the color as identification? This is a kosher fish. So this became like a whole course of lab in the OU. I think Rafelski was making on it, because the fish that are dyed, you could see like little white strands in the middle. It doesn't dye completely well, like as opposed to salmon, that the orange is through and through. I think that's why the OU is still Michael on it, even after the dyeing thing came up. But this is one of the big issues in practical kashrus in terms of the fish. So just to get back to our Gemara, it's a tiny little sugya about fish. Sachanta is a smelly fish. Sachanta, if the Rashash is right, that's the Stinkus Marinus. So Zoe sent us the link to that article. It's a lot of fun, this whole discussion about the Stinkus Marinus, whether it's kosher or not. Is it a skink? Is it a mud skipper? Is it who knows what? The Gemara says that Sachanta from the river Bab should technically be kosher, but Bisman Hazeh, or Bisman HaGemara, that all the other rivers ran into it, it's going to be treif, because maybe it comes from some other river. Any fish that doesn't have a backbone seems to be treif, according to the Gemara. And I think those are the dinim that we learned. Okay, Chefer, any questions or comments?
Just in terms of the dyed fish, I was actually at a fish farm. I don't remember why or when. And one thing they had on the sign was that I'm pretty sure they dye the salmon. They're like, even farm salmon isn't naturally pink, but because the consumer wants it to be pink, they dye it. So even regular salmon now can also be
interesting.
Dyed.
They dye it to make it more salmon-y, like a darker salmon color. Again, that's to me the bigger issue in terms of practical kashrus of fish, bisman hazeh, in terms of can you just go, like people sometimes, people in the working world, so one of the more difficult issues is, what do you do about a business lunch? So you go to a treif restaurant, and that's where you make deals. That's how people do it. So what can you as an Orthodox Jew eat in a treif restaurant? So there's a dish called sashimi, right? I think sashimi is just like a plain piece of uncooked salmon. That's basically what it is. So some suggest, I don't know if it's like such a crazy idea, like get a piece of sashimi, say it should be unflavored, because if it has like balsamic vinegar in it or any other vinegar, it could come from treif wine vinegar, right? Or you could say, you know what? Give me sashimi, just a plain lemon. I'll squeeze the lemon onto my sashimi. That should be fine. But that's only fine if you're assuming that you can positively identify the fish based on its color and say that's salmon. The OU still assumes that that's okay. Again, once it's cooked in a restaurant, you have to be worried about real issues of kashrus, even though the Gemara says that stam kelim shel nachrim einam b'nei yomon, that a goy's pot presumably was not used within the last 24 hours and it won't treif up your food. But in a restaurant, you can't assume stam kelim einam b'nei yomon. In the restaurant, they're using the same pot, right, all the time. That's what they do. So any cooked thing, even if it's not subject to the rules of Bishul Akum, even if it's Nechal Kmo Shu Chai, but once you're cooking it in a treif restaurant, you have to worry about treif flavor that goes into it. I think sashimi is just a plain why would anyone want to eat this? It's just a plain piece of fish. I think that's all it is, correct? But the issue at hand, obviously you have to make sure it's not flavored at all. You're like eating raw fish. And the issue at hand is going to be whether we can rely on the positive identification based on the color. I assume the color of the salmon is still simen mufak bisman hazeh. Okay. Any other questions?
You can also see this pretty easily. Like if you go look at a fish counter at Whole Foods, which prides itself on not buying fish like that, and go to a different fish market, you will see the difference in the pink. Like it's overdone in some, even with salmon.
You will see the difference if you know what to look for.
Right. But I'm like, to the point, I still think like salmon with no coloring, salmon with coloring, it's still like, you can still figure out what it is.
You can still notice that it's salmon. That's your response to Seema's fish farm. I hear. Okay, whatever. This Gemara has like almost nothing to do with Maseches Sukkah, but it was like a nice break, a fun little piece of Gemara. Okay, Chevra, Yashikayach. So, Im Yetzer Hashem, we'll meet next week. If any of you are like going on vacation, it's going to be like a smaller crowd. Like we could take a week off or something. We'll see. Like I'm happy continuing seeing Shiurim, but you know, if it's like a very small Chevra, I don't know if it's Kedai. Yeah, Tanya?
So first of all, the recordings are amazing. So it's a way to kind of stay in circuit. But I just had a question, because, and maybe you answered this when I was fiddling with the Zoom, but the opening line, Jarash, who was it? Rav Yehuda ben Elai? It's like a restatement of the Mishnah, but without the qualification. So if he's an Amora, like that's just a puzzling thing. And then is it Rav Yehuda?
Which opening line?
Oh, I'm sorry. Where we started, Rav Yehuda bar Elai.
Parash Rav Yehuda bar Elai, Avrum Masharya.
I'm sorry. The Bayis Shenifchas, Vesichei Chal Gavak Shira. And then Rav Yishmael then makes it like shtim with the Mishnah. So I guess my question is, like, why are we even considering an Amora who seems to depart? Like, I understand that the next statement qualifies it and makes it align with the Mishnah.
Oh, you're talking about the previous Darash Rabbi Yehuda bar Elai.
Oh, did we not start with that today? Sorry.
No, yeah, I just start with the fish. I've totally forgot about that Gemara. Those four lines about Bayish and Nifras.
So it's just, I guess what I was puzzled about is, so am I understanding this correctly? That like Rabbi Yishmael, the Rabbi Yossi, kind of like takes that statement, makes it align with the Mishnah. But my question is, why are we even considering a statement from an Amora that deviates from the Mishnah?
I think what the Gemara is saying is that Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi is going out of his way, is trying to explain that what Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Loi said has to be interpreted so that it, like you said, it stems with the Mishnah. Again, why we take it seriously? It's an Amora. He was a good Jew. He gave this as a public drasha. Darash means he got up, he said it in public. So the Gemara tries to deal with it. We never know which statements are just summarily rejected, right? Because it doesn't make it to the text because it was rejected beforehand. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Chevra. Excellent. So you should all have a wonderful Shabbos and do not eat any stinkus marinus. Okay. Yeshkach.
Thank you, Rabbi Schwartz.
Shabbos. Thank you.